Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, spread, totals, player props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball on WEEI.
Back here on WEEI into the 1 o'clock hour here on this beautiful fall Saturday, just after 1 o'clock, as a matter of fact, on October the 25th. 2025, Dan Ball with you. Thanks so much for being with us. I'm with you one more hour. KJ and Lions take you 2-6. And then we have coverage of BC football coming up here on the FM side. 7 o'clock is when the pregame begins, 7:30 kickoff down in Louisville. So that's on the FM side. On the AM side, we'll bring you coverage of Game 2 of the World Series, and we'll get you set for that, as well as reacting to a few of the most recent Red Sox notes coming up in our next segment. And then, I mean, you know, football Sunday is just, it's the day to kind of have it locked. Don't even really worry about touching the dial. You know, I know you can also change it. Sometimes, you know, cars have like the buttons on the steering wheel. Don't worry about those either. Yeah, football Sunday, you got Arkin, you got Ted Johnson, you got Scheib, you got Mago, and Tommy Curran is part of that. Beginning tomorrow at 10 ahead of the Patriots game, and then Fitzy and Hart will have you for the Six Rings postgame show after the conclusion of the Patriots game, going into coverage of Sunday Night Football. So whatever your need is within the greater sports realm, we'll have you covered here the rest of the weekend here on WEEI. Hello to those listening here on the flagship, 93.7 WEEI in Boston. Hello as well to those listening on the affiliates in Cape Cod, Providence, Rhode Island, Springfield, Mass., Worcester, Mass., Portland, Maine, Keene, New Hampshire, Claremont, New Hampshire, as well as White River Junction, Vermont, and as well as those listening on the Odyssey app. If you missed our conversation with Jeff Merrick from earlier on in the show talking Bruins and NHL hockey, you can catch that either on the Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcast. Just look up WEEI Weekend Shows. That'll be out shortly following the end of our program today. Let's get back into the New England Patriots in an update that was passed along from our good friend Ken Laird, host of Ken and Curtis, but most importantly, brand manager here at EEI. The Browns have elevated quarterback Bailey Zappe from the practice squad and are now listing quarterback Shedeur Sanders as questionable for Sunday due to a back injury. So the quarterback carousel of the Cleveland Browns. They are currently, I think I read it a couple weeks ago on this show, paying 8 quarterbacks. And when you have 8 quarterbacks on your payroll, do you really have a quarterback on your payroll? Well, they would argue that they do in Dylan Gabriel. And, you know, he's done his part to try to at least bring a little bit of something extra to this offense. But this Browns offense is abysmal. You stop the run and you have a pretty good chance to keep them deathly quiet during the course of the game. So the matchup to watch coming up tomorrow afternoon at Gillette Stadium, of course, is Myles Garrett against Will Campbell, or Myles Garrett in the pass rush against the offensive line at large. That is going to be the key, number 1, 2, and 3, to giving Drake May a chance to throw, something he has done tremendously well this season, to the point where he's currently 2nd in completion percentage, 2nd in yards per attempt, 2nd in passer rating, 2nd in completion percentage above expected, a metric, a statistic, that measures a quarterback's accuracy relative to the difficulty of their throws. He's 3rd in EPA per play and 6th in success rates. Those are some of the dork stats that are attached with being high in yards and low in interceptions and low in turnovers and all the traditional things that you see for a quarterback. May on completions, as we talked about earlier, of 20 or more yards, 5 touchdowns this year, 4 incompletions
this year. And all of these elements to your number two for the Patriots quarterback got me thinking, because there was a lot of talk about this. And during the afternoon show, during the course of the week, we got top five quarterback lists from a number of different guests. Got it from ESPN's Adam Schefter, got it from Brian Hoyer, got it from Mark Schlereth, got it from Mike Giardi and Tom Curran, on down the line. Asked the top five quarterback question to pretty much everybody. And everybody didn't really hesitate when they included Drake May in the list. It was more of a hesitation of how do I round out the top five than how do I begin. It was begun with Patrick Mahomes and Drake May. And then the rest, you started to hem and haw. Well, Dak Prescott is having a statistically significant year. He's leading the lead in QBR so far, so he's talented. He's probably a part of that, especially missing CeeDee Lamb, the ability to perform that he has without having CeeDee Lamb for a handful of games. Daniel Jones, what a return to glory for him, even stepping above his form that took the Giants to the playoffs and won a game against the Minnesota Vikings. Do you include Jones? Lamar Jackson has been very good, but he's been hurt. Do you take him out of the running because he's only played four games? And now he's missing another game this week, by the way. Expected to be back for week nine, but missing week eight. So he's played four, missed four. Sam Darnold, again, leaves the Kevin O'Connell coaching school and brings another level of tremendous play under center to the Seattle Seahawks. Justin Herbert's having a good year. Baker Mayfield, people were all high on him winning MVP up until his performance against the Lions, but I expect to bounce back there. Matthew Stafford turning back the clock. There's been a lot of good quarterback play, but the definition of MVP is most valuable player to your team. You take Baker Mayfield out of the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. There's been a lot of injuries around him. I do think another quarterback could make that offense work at a respectable level. You take Matthew Stafford out of the Rams, I think Sean McVay could make almost any quarterback work, proven by the fact that he had Baker Mayfield fly across the country, taught him five plays, and he won a game for you. McVay could do that. You pull Sam Darnold out of Seattle, Jaxon Smith-Njigba and company and Cooper Kupp and what they put together on that offense, rebuilding it on the fly from DK Metcalf and Tyler Lockett to JSN and Kupp and company. Whew! Tremendous bit of work done there out in Seattle. Daniel Jones, that's an interesting one, but again, Jonathan Taylor is having a career year. He probably merits more MVP conversation than Jones does for my money. Though, again, Daniel Jones is second in the league in QBR. However much you believe in that versus passer rating and other metrics. I say all of that to say that if you pull Drake May out of the New England Patriots, well, I can't wait to see where they fall in the draft and which top-end pass rusher that they're going to take with a top-five pick. This team is nothing without the performance of their quarterback through seven games. And that is whether it's Josh Dobbs, whether it's Joe Milton, whether it's the guy that apparently will be the backup in Cleveland, Bailey Zappi, whether it's the return of Mac Jones. Some people, I guess, would argue, watching what's going on in San Fran, that if you put Jones back under center in New England, you'd be able to win some games. That's probably true. You're not where you are in the standings. You're not where you are in terms of your potential. You're not where you are in terms of one of the league's most explosive, deep threat passing offenses without Drake May. He's my through 7 weeks MVP, most valuable player to their team. And I don't think there's that much of a conversation to be had. I think each quarterback that you point to, be it coaching, be it talent around them, be it talent on the offensive line, you can point to and go, well, they're good. They're certainly operating at an elite level, but they're not as valuable to where if you took them away, what would it look like? I think there is such a stark difference between what you're seeing in New England with Drake and without him, and I think it's more so than any other quarterback in football. That is my impassioned plea. Now, what are the drawbacks, the takeaways, the concerns that have been voiced this week? Because again, I'm not just sitting here spewing my nonsense without anything behind it. This is a take that has been parroted by local and national NFL analysts, columnists, so-called experts, people that have played, people that have covered the game for years. All of a sudden, he has vaulted himself into being third or maybe fourth at worst in MVP gambling odds to this point in the season. You, for most sports books, have Mahomes, Josh Allen, and up until Thursday Night Football, Baker, that were with him or ahead of him in the MVP race. But it's the definition of the term that I'm looking at. Most valuable to the team on which they play, that makes me go, I just don't think that somebody else has quite reached that same level. The concerns are twofold. One, which was addressed by Drake and by Josh McDaniels and by others this week, which is his propensity to take hits. The amount of times that we see the backside of his skull crack off the turf after he tries to tuck it and run and tries to play hero ball. Don't get me wrong. There is still a little too much hero ball in Drake's game. It's not uncommon for a young quarterback at this point in his professional career to have a little bit of hero ball in him. I don't need to throw it away. I don't need to take the sack. I can run through them. I'll drop my shoulder. I'll try to make it a dumb pass because I've gotten away with it before, and I'll get away with it here. Not uncommon. Drake's not the first quarterback to have that in his game, and he's certainly not going to be the last. And you can see the impact of just a year's worth of pro football under his belt, the impact of Alex Van Pelt, and the impact of Josh McDaniels, and apparently the impact of quarterbacks coach Ashton Grant, who, as soon as Mike Vrabel gets the chance to talk about, he does. Mike very, very briefly touches on Josh McDaniels and then immediately goes to the quarterback's coach. So either there's still something there, or Ashton Grant is having an unprecedented amount of impact on Drake's second-year growth. I'm still not entirely sure which one it is versus which one it's not. But between that triumvirate of coaches, past and present, you can see that they're slowly and surely kind of working that hero ball out of Drake's game. So will it continue that progression? Yes. Are there probably going to be a few more hits that you see him take that make you go, oh God, get the tent ready? Yeah, probably. It assuredly will never completely be gone from his game. He's athletic. He's a dog. He's fighting out there. He's going to try to get the yards if he can, and he's going to put himself in harm's way in the process. It's still part of Josh Allen's game. You just got to be tough enough to bounce back up, and this is not what a rules official in the NFL would want to hear, but learn not to shake your head when you get cracked, because that one kind of gave it away a little bit. So it's still going to be a part of his game, and he's going to learn really quickly. It's pretty simple. He's either going to learn when to throw the ball away and not try to play hero ball and run through a linebacker, or he's going to have a short career. Those are really the only two options that are in front of him. But progress is being made. I'm okay with that. The other thing is it's a historically easy schedule that he's facing. What happens when you face a team that's actually good at football? What happens when you face an elite pass rush? What happens when you face an elite secondary and you're not able to air it out to Kayshon Booty and be as good down the field as he is? How accurate is he? Is he accurate against bad teams because they're bad? Or is he just accurate no matter who's playing opposite Kayshon Booty or Pop Douglas on the outside? So these are maybe concerns at this point is even too strong. Just questions that have yet to have an obvious answer that I think people who would push back against him would probably bring to the forefront first. He's gotten way, way more comfortable in the pocket. That's been the biggest the biggest eye-opening thing to me. I was really worried about his just first instinct, get out of the pocket and run, throw on the run, throw across your body, throw a yard from the sidelines. It's a great thing to have in your back pocket, and he mentioned during the preseason, I'm trying to remain a passer longer. That's where the sentence ended. I wanted him to say, I want to remain a passer in the pocket longer. You're seeing him get a lot more comfortable controlling the pocket, moving the pocket, stepping up and throwing. And that's also a factor of a better offensive line, but it's just the comfort. Being willing to, all right, I might take a hit here, but I got to stay under center and throw. That's been a huge, huge growth. Something I wasn't sure he was capable of, at least not in this short of an amount of time. He's been better there, more accurate, less decisions that put the ball in harm's way. Not none, but less. And you're seeing a really, really dynamic talent lead this offense. An offense that still has a bit of a talent discrepancy. Has a bit of a lack of true top-end talent that you wonder, how much longer is that going to be a thing? Because the Patriots were described as football Siberia by Tom Curran in this offseason, and he wasn't wrong. I mean, the way things went in the post-Belichick era, the 1 year of Mayo, a first-year quarterback who probably had more questions than answers entering the year, he wasn't wrong or off base in using that term. Now, the opportunity for a top-end player on a team that still has salary cap space, and yes, I know, are they going to actually spend the cap? I don't know, probably not. But the opportunity to come in, play for Vrabel, play with May, all of a sudden, New England for top-end offensive players becomes a pretty interesting destination if you're trying to sign a big contract. But that's for us to debate in the future. In the present, the New England Patriots take on the Cleveland Browns at Gillette Stadium coming up tomorrow. They're riding a 5-game winning streak against the Browns. They're 5-0 all time at Gillette against the Browns as well. So the numbers are on their side. The offensive talent of the Cleveland Browns is certainly on the Patriots' side. And the health right now is also on their side. One player with an injury designation, that's Kyle Duggar. He deals with a knee injury, but you've had some return to health for guys in your secondary like Jalen Hawkins. Christian Gonzalez was also off the injury report. So guys are starting to work their way back into health, so you should see a pretty complete group out there for the Patriots tomorrow. Again, Football Sunday starts your day tomorrow at 10 a.m. up until 1 o'clock for the kickoff of the 1 o'clock games. You'll have the Six Rings post-game show with Fitzy and Hart coming up after the Patriots game, and then a whole slew of Patriots Monday guests, Mike Vrabel, Boomer Esiason, Hunter Henry, and/or Christian Ellis, and, of course, Drake May and Marcus Jones on the afternoon program as well. 617-779-7937. Any spare thoughts on the New England Patriots? I want to hear from you. We'll also get into the latest news and notes from the Boston Red Sox. Jason Varitek is staying. That is good. Alex Bregman is currently going. That is bad. We'll sort through the good and the bad for the Red Sox, and also we'll look at the World Series, which was an incredible debut up north yesterday. All that and more coming up after David Azier gets you caught up on what's trending.
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5. I know where I'm going to bet from now on. Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In-app only.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
Hi, I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, a board-certified OBGYN and menopause specialist. My new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it really takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Every week, I sit down with medical experts, cultural icons, and powerhouse women to talk about what really matters: your health, your power, and your future. We're covering hormones, identity, finances, relationships, and so much more. New episodes drop every Tuesday. Listen to and follow Unpaused with me, Dr. Mary Claire Haver, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
Dan Ball. Dan Ball. On WEEI.
My favorite stat from Game 1 of the World Series yesterday was not a Shohei Ohtani eye-popping batting average or home run or strikeouts or anything. It wasn't George Springer's postseason performance. It was this. Treya Savage, the Blue Jays starting pitcher who makes $57,000 a year, started the game by striking out Shohei Ohtani, who makes $47 million a year. That's 824 times his salary. It was an awesome way for the World Series to start. He follows up by saying it's 57K because it's prorated, but it's still pretty wild to see. Feels like being a radio producer. Anyways, the World Series started off with quite the performance by the Blue Jays north of the border. And I went back and forth on, would the Boston Red Sox have been able to beat the Toronto Blue Jays if they were put in a series against the Toronto Blue Jays after the wild card round?
No.
In the divisional round. Alex Cora says no, and so do I. Now, do I think they were capable of putting up a better fight? Yes, I think they were. But unfortunately, your pitching was just so incredibly thin at that point that I think you would have ran out of options if you went there. And Toronto has that kind of momentum, has that it factor that is not something you can teach, nor is it something that you can predict. You have guys who are coming through in clutch situations that maybe you weren't expecting. You were hoping, but you weren't expecting. Addison Barger. David shakes his head. Yes, Barger. Comes up lefty on lefty. Pinch hit. Grand slam yesterday. Alejandro Kirk. All 5'5" of them. He's a very symmetrical character, as I think he is as tall as he is wide. But he hits bombs. And he did yesterday as well. George Springer's postseason resume needs no introduction. From Houston to Toronto, he has been one of the better clutch hitters of a generation in the postseason with go-ahead home runs and things of that like. So they kind of have it. And for as much as it's been Vladdy, who's been lights out, he was the ALCS MVP, it's been Springer, it's the guys who you pay the most. It's also the guys that weren't known. The Treya Savage getting game one of the World Series. Who? On a team that has Kevin Gausman and Chris Bassett and Jose Barrios, like these guys that have been paid a lot of money for a lot of years to be top-end pitchers. And you go with the rookie who was in, I think I heard, was in A-ball or double-A ball at the beginning of the season. I mean, those are the kind of stories that you need just as much of. For every David Ortiz, you need a Jacoby Ellsbury. You know what I'm saying? Like For every Mookie, or not every Mookie, but for every star, every Mike Napoli, you need a Xander Bogaerts. You need the veteran, and you also need the young kid. Just a little bit of a mix of everything, and you need a manager that sets the right tone. And John Schneider is a guy who just doesn't really seem to be bothered by anything. And we made a whole bunch out of him saying, you know, people may think the sky is falling, but it's not. It was an interesting soundbite. But the crazy thing out of all of it is that he meant it, and it was true. So when he said, we don't believe the sky is falling, clearly he imparted to his group that, hey, the sky is not falling. We're talented, and we have just as good of a chance to win this thing as ever. And that's exactly where they are. And the Dodgers right now, their bullpen issues are going to be a major problem in this series. How thin they are in the back end, trying to get outs and go, you know, match up lefty righty and everything like that, as John Lyons comes in with a Dodgers hat today. Whoo, I don't know about that. We'll discuss that coming up in just a little bit as KJ and Lyons have you 2-6 here this afternoon. But enough with the teams that are playing. Let's get into the team that's not. David, you and I were talking during Flannel Fest 2025 here at Odyssey Boston yesterday. Give me a level of trust out of 10 in the Red Sox front office and ownership group at large to do what they need to do this offseason and make a big swing for the kind of talent that kind of turns heads? Give me a trust level out of 10.
6.
Really? It's all right, passing grade, technically.
Yeah, I just think there's going to be so many teams going after the same things that you're going after. And that's the problem. Can you outbid all of these other teams? I'm just not 100% confident in this ownership that they'll be willing to spend big to fill these assets when so many other teams like the Dodgers are probably bidding for the same people.
What if I expand my question to also include trades? Still 6?
I would move it up to a 7 because I think they have the assets to make a trade like that.
Yeah.
It's just how willing are they to move on from some of these guys that they've kept around for probably longer than they should have at this point.
Right. That was kind of the crux of our discussion over a beer on Thursday was there is still a logjam, even though you've promoted Anthony, Meyer, Campbell. You know, we saw a bit of the password. You see Connolly early. You see Peyton Tolley, whatever. You had a lot of prospects making their debuts and making some significant contributions so far this season. And amazingly enough, there's still just as many, if not more, high caliber prospects that are now stuck in a bit of a logjam. As currently constructed, Justinson Garcia is never going to see the field with the way the outfield is constructed. Same could be said up the middle for Mikey Romero and Franklin Arias. You know, pitching-wise, Luis Perales is going to have a chance. Early will have a chance. Tolley will have a chance. But your position players are in a bit of an awkward spot right now where you have holes that may be there. You know, you might have a hole at third, but you might also lock up Bregman long term. And I think a 4 or 5 year deal comes out of this offseason for Bregman. Story is almost assuredly going to opt in. So barring any changes in the Bregman sweepstakes, your left side of the infield should be set for the next couple of years. First base, I'm not really sure, but you don't have a first baseman waiting in the wings either. It's Casas. Nathaniel Lowe is arbitration eligible, so you could non-tender him. I'd be a little surprised if they did. So it's kind of just a competition for second base once again. So your infield prospects, whoever loses, immediately becomes a trade chip. The password becomes a trade chip. And my theory with why he came up and played a little bit, it felt to me like the Red Sox were trying to put some of his game on tape at the professional level to kind of just send out quietly to teams like the Minnesota Twins and go, hey, he's played games. He's fast. He's got great hair. He could be yours if the price is right. Like, you know, that kind of thing. So I am with you, David, that I would love Kyle Schwarber back. Even if he brings you a subpar first base or, you know, DH hybrid, whatever you end up doing with Moss's contract, if you can offload it, I don't know, whatever. You've had subpar first base play for years at this point. It's not new to see a guy who doesn't know how to field the position. And we talked earlier in the show during the Bruins segment about whose team is it? You can ask anybody in baseball and a Mount Rushmore best clubhouse guy that comes out of anybody's mouth with any kind of information is Kyle Schwarber. He automatically joins your Story and Bregman group of veteran leaders that set the right tone for the Red Sox. I would love Roman Anthony to come off the field after hitting a home run and go down the tunnel and talk to Alex Bregman and Kyle Schwarber. That would be awesome to me. However, to David's point, 29 other teams, including his current team, the Phillies, would also love Kyle Schwarber. Same could be said for Kyle Tucker. Same could be said for Pete Alonso. There just isn't a lot of impact talent for the middle of your order available for the picking. You're going to have to really come in swinging and overpay in order to get that kind of pop in your lineup. And if there's one word that I don't associate with the Red Sox in this modern, in this current era, it's overpay. So I am right there with you where I think you have a really interesting opportunity on the trade market this offseason. John Lyons and I got all into the whole Fernando Tatis conversation. I'm not going to relitigate that. I would absolutely call the Padres, but I'm sure there's a snowball's chance in hell that that's actually going to happen. First call is obviously to the Minnesota Twins. Our collective understanding on the afternoon program from, you know, people who like to have conversations about baseball is just because it didn't get done by the trade deadline doesn't mean it's not going to get done. I'm at the point where I would actually be a little surprised if Joe Ryan wasn't a Red Sox come February. Yes, David.
So two things. One, same can be said for Garrett Crochet. They poked around at that at the trade deadline and ultimately made the deal in the offseason.
Right.
And the second thing is, I think an underrated part of this, and I don't know if we've talked about this yet, was that Craig Breslow mentioned that he wants to hire a GM. And I'm curious, how long does that search take? Does that hold up any potential, you know, capacity to make deals? I just hope if they are hiring a GM, they get that done soon.
Absolutely, because Paul Toboni departs and becomes the grand baseball officer out in Washington. He's been hiring half the Red Sox scouting staff to join him. So it's a really interesting opportunity I think the Red Sox have on that front, because the one big complaint about Breslow, he's been pretty darn good during the offseason. I give credit where credit is due to the fact that when there's not a time crunch, he's able to make some pretty swift moves. He's been Crochet and Narvaez in the same day. He's been able to do some pretty good work when there's no clock associated with it. But when it's crunch time and you have to rely on relationships and negotiating and swift tactics and just baseball knowledge and acumen, Breslow has cracked under pressure. I would love to see the Red Sox add a GM with a deeper baseball resume than Breslow has as an executive, a guy who has been in those rooms before, and somebody who can help with the in-season negotiations, somebody who's been through trade deadlines, who can sit there, who can help advise. You only have to advise. I don't need you to pull the trigger on every deal, but I need you there to help move these conversations along, because I perceived the Red Sox trade deadline as analysis paralysis. They got so deep into the weeds on trying to win a trade with the Minnesota Twins that they forgot about Merrill Kelly. They forgot about these rental pitchers, even Charlie Morton. I was bellyaching all month leading up to the trade deadline. Oh my God, I would be so upset if the Red Sox acquired Charlie Morton. And then I got Dustin May for all of my worries. Are you kidding me? So anyways, I think there's somebody, there's an opportunity, David, for the Red Sox to add somebody in that GM position who can cut through the numbers, cut through the analytics, and cut through all of this overanalyzing of every single aspect and just say, hey, we need to get something done that improves this baseball team. Let me call blank. I have a relationship with them. I used to work with blank in somebody's front office. Rely on relationships and experience in order to get these jobs done. So I think it's a well-made point by you. Some notes that are floating around on this team right now we'll get to just really quick. The Red Sox, per Chris Cotillo, love Kyle Schwarber. Same. And you can expect them to show real interest in bringing him back if the Phillies don't re-sign him quickly. Okay? Interest Kings once again. As of mid-September, Red Sox decision makers expected Trevor Story, who has 2 years and $55 million left on his contract, to opt in. There's a chance he'd make more than that on the open market, but there's also a feeling that he feels loyalty and appreciation toward the Red Sox after missing most of the first 3 years of the deal. No real surprise on that one either. From John Heyman, I think any big market team could go for Kyle Tucker. I see the Giants, the Red Sox, potentially the Mets for Tucker, but the Dodgers, to me, make a lot of sense. Okay, cool. Another one to the Dodgers? Are there new positions in baseball that he can play? Are they adding a rover like they have in softball so he can just kind of sit between the infielders and the outfielders? Oh, my goodness. Anyways, last one. And this one was from Jim Bowden, who was famously accused by Alex Cora of making up trade rumors. So I'll put that caveat in front of it. Jaron Duran's name keeps coming up in trade rumors, and it now seems like the Red Sox will move on from him this winter. Shocking. Teams such as the Phillies, Dodgers, Tigers, Guardians, and Rangers would love to land him. He's also controllable through the 2028 season, so it would take a huge haul for the Red Sox to move him. So somebody, Alex Cora, went to Jim Bowden and said, hey, I need you to build up a little bit of steam on Jaron Duran having great trade value. That list, not including the San Diego Padres, automatically tells me that it's wrong. any trade of Jaren Duran has to be ran past the San Diego Padres. If what we've been told for months and years about AJ Preller and his love for Jaren Duran is true, you cannot make a deal for Duran without at least calling the Padres to try to up the value. That is a baseball cardinal sin to me if you don't end up doing that. And those are all good teams. All teams that could use a difference maker like Duran at the top of the lineup. I think the time has absolutely come, by the way, for this thing to happen. It was a pretty dismal end of the season, and I view him as a depreciating asset. I see him, and I know I mentioned this name earlier in the segment. It's ironic that it comes up twice. I see him in that Jacoby Ellsbury mold. When you're so fast and you're so explosive, it is a ton of fun to watch you play out in the outfield and at the top of the lineup when you're good. But when it goes quick. So I'm not saying it's happening now. I'm not saying it's happening in a few years. But that kind of aging for a player of Duran's style who goes 110% in everything that he does, it comes quickly and it's an exponential drop. So if I was the Red Sox trying to sort through this glut, would get ahead of that. And if you told me that two of the Red Sox outfielders ended up being moved this offseason, if there's a power hitting right fielder that may or may not be named Kyle Tucker that was the result of that, then I'd say, yes, absolutely, you have to do that. So a lot of things floating around, a lot of decisions made. This can't be an ad around the fringes offseason, just as plain as simple as that. It cannot be an I'm adding a fifth starter, I'm adding a backup second baseman, I'm doing this, I'm doing that, I'm trying to bolster the depth. No. You now have established that you are a team that can compete. Now is the time that you go. If there was any offseason to act like the Boston Red Sox of old that was in on any and every deal, last year's team proved that this offseason is the offseason that you should do that. 617-779-7937. We'll wrap up some calls. We'll get John Lyons in here. KJ and Lyons coming up 2 to 6 here this afternoon. They got a ton planned in terms of the Patriots and everything going on there, and we'll get to all of that next.
Bet365 is paying out before the final whistle.
Check out Bet365's unrivaled early payout offer. When you bet on a team to win and they take a 17-point lead, you get paid no matter the final score. Forget the final whistle and start counting that cash. Hold up. You get early payout on parlays, too.
Download the app and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply.
Kevin Stefanski and Andrew Berry, do you think that they are good at what they do?
Yeah, I think so. Well, Stefanski, two-time coach of the year. Andrew Berry, I don't know who. Do we blame the Haslams for the Deshaun Watson debacle?
The questions and the criticisms are more about ownership than anybody on the sideline or in the GM.
He's the head coach of a franchise owned by Jimmy Haslam, so who knows? If you put him in a more stable situation with a less volatile compound in the owner's box, maybe you'd get more.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.
This is Dan Ball on WEEI.
Amazingly enough, we have come to the end of our time here on WEEI. KJ and Lyons have you for the next 4 hours, 2 to 6. Boston College football coverage begins at 7 o'clock tonight here on the FM side. AM side, you'll hear coverage of Game 2 of the World Series, courtesy of ESPN Radio. Let's catch up on a couple calls before we hand you over to KJ and Lyons. Mark is in New Hampshire on the Red Sox. What's up, Mark?
Yeah, hey, Dan. I just wanted to comment on Red Sox ownership.
Yeah.
A couple of things. I mean, we could nitpick stuff for the next 3 hours, but the two things that really, really irritate me, one was there is no way Craig Breslow is better than Dave Dombrowski. There's no chance. No one will ever convince me that.
Agreed.
Kyle Schwarber, that never should have happened. All you had to do was pay the man, and they didn't do that.
Right.
And then we can go on to Mookie Betts and all that and how they've misspent, blah, blah, blah. But, yeah, I just don't have confidence that they are really committed to truly spending on this team. They got 4 in 20 years, and I think they're just resting on their laurels at this point. Yeah, that's what I got.
Yeah, I'm right there with you, Mark. Thank you for the call. Unfortunately, there's a very accurate stance that the Red Sox, the biggest role that they play is cash machine for the ownership group. That's certainly a part of all of this. But I'm willing to believe for no other reason than I'm a fan and I want to hold on to the belief that they're still capable of spending that kind of money. There just isn't, to his point, there isn't nearly as much evidence to that being the case. But I came into this studio today wearing a Red Sox hat, and I'm still going to root for the team no matter what. But it is hard to swallow the fact that I look at the ticket prices, the beer prices, hot dog prices, how much it costs to just go in and watch a Red Sox game, or to subscribe to NESN 360, or to try to be a part of this fan base. And I go, jeez, I am working really hard to be a fan of mediocre baseball for years and years and years. So my hope is that they're coming out the other side and are realizing just how much the fan base was excited and engaged, and how awesome the Fenway Fridays were this year. I'm holding out hope that there is still a chance that happens. But again, the pessimism that's surrounding the ownership group is an earned privilege, not something that's just been given. And finally, he needs no introduction, but I'll give him anyways. Paulie and Dedham, what's going on, Paulie?
Hey, brother, nice to talk to you, Danny boy.
What's going on?
Yeah, quick, a couple of things. I'm going to shift gears, so keep up with me.
Okay.
Trevor Story, that's a real man. Loyalty, I've been out for a few years. I'm sticking with the team. Great.
I agree.
We need an offensive guy. We need a left guard in this order. A left guard. If you can get Trevian Henderson, great. Trey Hendrickson, great. I've been on this since the summer. Looked like the price was coming down, but the Bengals have stabilized.
Yep.
They're going to win again tomorrow. I think that's going to be a reach. Get a safety, a real field general out there. Number three, going to ask you. Notre Dame went into last week against Southern Cal, ranked 13.
Yeah.
They beat them 34-24. It was a great game. And a couple of teams that were ahead of them, like Missouri and Tennessee, both lost.
Right.
They dumped Notre Dame down 7 spots to 20-21. And Tennessee and Missouri and others are ranked ahead of them. How in the hell does that happen? Could you please explain that to me?
Be my pleasure, Paulie. I'll try to do it quickly. I would guess, because I saw that and it didn't make a ton of sense. I would guess it's more just a quality of opponent based. You also have teams that took big jumps. I talked about Vanderbilt jumping up 7 spots. That knocked them down a peg. So I think that's a part of it. But it was a little surprising. I would rest it more on the quality of opponent for them versus if it's a big win versus a certain opponent versus another team having a close loss against an SEC team, for example. But Trevor Story is a real man. We're looking for a left guard. And Trevian Henderson. No, wait. Trey Hendrickson. That's who we're looking for at the trade deadline for the New England Patriots. But KJ and Lions is coming up next. That's all the time I have. So make sure you get in line for them at 617-779-7937. Patriots talk coming up. I'm sure the Celtics will be in the mix a little bit. Justin Turpin will join them later on in the program to discuss the plight of the Boston Celtics and where they're headed here this season. But want to thank David Azar back behind the glass. Always a ton of fun to ride with him. KJ and Lions coming your way next. Boston College football later on this evening. And then, of course, a whole plethora of football programming here on WEEI on Sunday. Football Sunday beginning at 10 a.m. Eastern. Have a great rest of your Saturday. Stay tuned for KJ and Lions. See ya!
Listen up, football fans. You won't want to miss this.
Right now, new Bet365 customers bet $5 and get $200 in bonus bets, win or lose. So you could turn that $200 into something bigger when you bet on Moneyline, Spread, Totals, Player Props.
$200 in bonus bets when new customers bet $5.
I know where I'm going to bet from now on.
Download the app today and see why it's never ordinary at Bet365. Gambling problem? Call 1-800-GAMBLER. 21 plus only. Must be physically located in Ohio. T&Cs apply. In app only.
It's not coming from Brent Veach and Andy Reid, and it's not coming from Sean McVay. It's coming from the Cleveland Browns. And yeah. You're seeing exactly
you know
what
why
people
it's not,
outside of Cleveland
you know,
think of the Browns, outside of
you
Browns.
You know why
fans.
It's not coming from those guys? Because they didn't draft him. They didn't want him to begin with. This was the one team that wanted him, and they're telling you he's behind. Maybe it's not a grand conspiracy. Maybe everybody is right, and the Shador fans, you wackos. Maybe it's your guy is just not ready. Maybe you got to come to grips with it.
The Ken Carmen Show with Anthony Lima on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and wherever you get your podcasts.
I'm Dr. Mary Claire Haver, and my new podcast, Unpaused, is the place for bold, unfiltered conversations about what it takes for women to thrive in the second half of life. Listen to and follow Unpaused, available now wherever you get your podcasts.